Greetings and salutations, everyone. Once again, this is AT2GS. My name is Roy, and I'm net control operator for the Limon Technical Net. Limon Technical Net has been going along 43 years now. Sunday night at 8 p.m., we all get together in front of our radios to entertain each other, to inform each other, to learn from each other. It's a great getting together of fellow enthusiasts for this wonderful hobby of ours, and I'm glad you're out there and joining me once again on this Sunday night. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual link. Okay, if you would like to contact me and you're not able to get a radio to communicate for this technical net, then email is as good as any. It would either be for what we call mailbag questions, in which you email me the question, and I try to respond as best I can, and you are free to listen in to an audio stream we provide, or our Echolink nodes, or our All-Star nodes, and or an archive. A recorded archive is available later in the week of this particular technical net. Also, if you have a topic for discussion, if something has come up in the news and you're familiar with it and you'd like to explain it to the rest of us, people have contacted me and said, I'd like to talk about this subject. And if it's appropriate, I'm more than happy to hand over the mic. It'd either be for a kind of a mock station, questions, answers, but it could be someone who doesn't want to do a whole deal, just wants to be part of a conversation of a given topic, or sometimes it's a person who's not very secure in their knowledge of that topic. They would like other people to discuss it, and they'll soak up the wisdom of secondarily. We love technical puzzles, things that are a little bit difficult to solve by Googling, that are more conceptual, don't really need or want mathematics problems with calculators now. So if you have a technical puzzle, please feel free to send it to me, and if I could use it, it'll be good to exercise for all of our neurons. It's not necessarily the destination, it's sort of the journey. Let me drop for a second, and I will continue with my link. Okay, every week I kind of cut and paste together a whole bunch of interesting stories and YouTubes and all kinds of stuff that piques my interest and I think might pique some other people's interest, and I call it my link page. So if you type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com, it'll bring you to the link page. That's available 24/7. Click on the link, read the articles, your heart's content, any time of the day, morning, evening, afternoon. There's a chat room available. Sometimes the chat is very, very loud and talkative. Sometimes it's very, very quiet. You can get to the chat room by typing in chat.ac2gs.com. We have an audio stream that I provide. If you type into your browser, technet.ac2gs.com, it'll bring you an audio stream of the Glen Oaks repeater. I set it up primarily for the technical net, but a few people asked me to keep it live for the rest of the week, and so it's live for the rest of the week. Also, want to remind people, MikeAC2NJI has a great archive site. It's called AmateurRadio.tv. He has archived our technical net going as far back as September of 2006. A lot of wisdom from hams that either moved away from the area or become silent keys and passed away. He has over 1 million visitors, so make it 1,000,001. So those are the usual links. Let me drop, and I'll tell you what we got planned for tonight. Okay, we have a special guest tonight, Richie, K2KNB, our president. Has discovered some interesting new information, as far as I'm aware, about Gap Titan antennas. They don't seem to operate in a way that's normally seen with the average antenna. They have particular foibles you should be aware of, but for whatever reason, the manufacturer doesn't really publicize those foibles. So I thought that it would be great if Richie joined us tonight and told us what he had discovered about his Gap Titan antenna. So he'll be up front. After he does his presentation, we will take people's questions and comments and such. I'll write it down in a list, and we'll try and get this to it in an orderly fashion. I hope the first few people will be asking questions based on amateur radio. But if time permits and there aren't any amateur radio questions left, we will certainly entertain anything in science and technology and try and do our best to discuss it with you. That should take us to 10:15. We're called WS2N. We'll give us the SpaceNet report. That should take us to 11 p.m., and I'll return to tie a bow on it all and wish you well for the following week. So that's the plan. If the universe continues going on the way it's going on, and the repeater, and especially my radio, you never know. Anyway, with that in mind, let me drop for a second. Okay, first up, as I mentioned earlier, Rich, K2KNB, wants to tell us some interesting stuff he's discovered about Gap Titan antennas. Rich?
Hi, thank you, Roy, and good evening to all. This is K2KNB. So, Roy and Andy has also been part of this. I guess if we were going to title it, it would come under the title of RTMS, Read the Manual, Stupid. And then after you read the manual, call the manufacturer or look at the manufacturer's website and see if there's any FAQs up there. Call some friends, put it up on eHam, and just do a whole bunch of things to make sure that you have all of the information necessary. So I'm going to start somewhere in the middle. I had a Gap Titan antenna that underwent a couple of drops and things like that, and it wasn't performing well, so I bought a Comet CH250, which is a pretty well-rated antenna, 10 through 80. And along with that, because I had some old cable, I ran some new cable under a conduit that I had put in the ground about 10 years ago. And so I'm starting fresh, new cable, everything's great, except that the antenna is not performing well. Not performing well at all. I've been working with a few contacts, but not really seeing anything. At some point, out of frustration, I call Comet. Let me write this up. And telling them I'm just not getting anything good with the antenna. And they said to me, well, how is it mounted? I said, it's mounted with the base about 11 feet above the ground. Oh, no, it will perform best at 31 feet. At 31 feet, I'm not putting an antenna up at 31 feet that's going up another 21, 22, 23 feet. So the Comet goes, and I go back to my trusty Gap Titan. It sat for a little while. We finally put it together. I put it up there, and I'm getting somewhat better results, but I'm mostly interested in 80. I need a few more countries to DXCC, and I'm getting nothing on 80. Well, it's the beginning of winter time. I let things slide, and sometime last week, I took out my trusty little MFJ or my Comet, and I go up to the antenna. I'm mostly interested in 40 because it has a counterpoise. I take my measurements at 40. I'm very, very high. Probably 73.50 for a 1-to-1. Well, they tell you to make the counterpoise on the Gap Titan longer, obviously longer, and that will drop the frequency. Well, I do that, and it's very successful. Well, by the way, that's in the manual. It specifically says, here's your starting point, the rope should be so long, the counterpoise should be so long, and that's a great starting point. So that was first thing in the manual. But now I have a great reading on 40 meters. Go up to 80 meters, I have nothing. Absolutely nothing. I'm talking about, actually 40 meters at the antenna, but 80 meters when I came back up to the shack. A couple of days later, we go out and we're going to be really serious about dealing with this problem. I have, at the antenna, a very poor reading. I call Gap. I say, what's the... Oh, you know, I should point out one other thing. When I first put the Gap up, I wasn't getting anything, anything reasonable in a one-to-one ratio, one-to-one SWR. Nothing. I called Gap and they said, Yeah, we find that if the plug hasn't been put on properly, that could be the cause of erroneous readings all over the place. We took the plug off, resided it, put it on, much better readings, but nothing great. We let it drop. So at this point, I call GAP, I'm not getting great readings on 80, and they start to go through a litany of things that is pretty amazing. So bear this in mind, the GAP antenna is a great antenna, but bear this in mind. If you're in a 30-foot radius of any vertical steel structure, there's the possibility of coupling to that structure. If you're anywhere near an aluminum-sided building, whether it's you or your neighbors, you have the possibility of getting reflection coming off of that building. All right, neither of those things affected me. Do they have, he said to me, do you have anything else that's new? I said, no, not really. He said, well, we have problems with LMR 400. And I said, well, when I got my cable, I didn't buy LMR 400. I bought DX Engineering's equivalent. It's called DX 400. Well, he just said, go through the things that I told you, check all your cables, check all your connections, and that's what I did. It finally turns out that the DX400 and the LMR400 have something in common, and that is that they're double shielded, once with a braid and once with a foil. What GAP has found, and let me let it drop, what GAP has found is that in the rush sometimes to put the cables together, they don't always get both the braid and the foil together. And so if, for example, if you, I'm not sure that I would even think about it, but if you got the braid on one end and the foil on the other, you haven't accomplished anything. Because the GAP antenna is dependent upon a good shield for that antenna. And not only coming off of my antenna, but what I tried to do at one point was to bypass it, take a 15-foot jumper, let's say, and hook it up 15 or 20 feet away from the antenna itself and reconnect to the DS400, same effect. Can't get a reading out of it. And what was happening was, we were getting a once on, and you know, I know I'm a little convoluted here, we were getting a one-to-one at the antenna at 3610, which was great. That's exactly where I wanted to be. As soon as I went to the end of the DX400, which was still at kind of ground level, but about 20 or 30 feet away, I wasn't getting any reading at all, and that's how I began to know that it had to be the cable. So it turns out that LMR400, DX Engineering 400, any double shielded, if it's not perfectly put together, you're going to get very bad results out of this GAP antenna. I corrected all of that, and the way I did it was to hook up to a piece of buried cable that I had that's 20 years old. I put PL259s on the end of it, ran a jumper, connected it, and suddenly, just before I got up to the house, or running to the last cable that's going upstairs, when there's a drop, I was at 1-to-1 on 3610. Great, exactly what I wanted to be. I go up into the shack, and it's only another 30 feet away, going up 30 feet away, and I'm now at 1.3-to-1. Well, in order to make the connection of coming from the antenna down to the old piece of cable to a jumper, the jumper to the piece going up to the house, I actually have 20 PL259s or SO239s in the line. I never in my life thought that I would have something like that, but that's what I have. A PL259, as you probably know, is not 50 ohms, it's about 42 ohms. Usually it doesn't matter, it's 1 inch, 2 inches, 3 inches. Well, I have 2 feet of that, and that is enough of a problem right there to give me that difference. And I will make the correction. I will replace the wire, go back, eliminate as many of these connectors as possible, and I should be a happy camper. But there's another thing about the GAP Titan. Let me stop. First of all, you can't take a measurement, even though mine's 11 feet up in the air, you can't take a measurement from underneath. Why? Because you may couple to the antenna. So if you're ever taking measurements at least 15 to 20 feet away with a jumper and then taking measurements there. The Gap Titan has a coaxial cable that comes down the center of it, and as you're assembling it, you put everything together, and then at the very end, you must feed it through a hole that's on the side of the pole, about maybe 2 inches, 2.5 inches from the bottom. When I mentioned that particular thing to Gap, because we have somebody, one of our members, bought a Gap antenna that had already been assembled by someone, he said, if you don't have that wire going through that that one hole, don't bother calling us because it's not going to be operating properly. I said, what about if I were to take the wire the 2 inches down and just kind of bent the same angle, hold it in place? Wouldn't that be the same? I said, nope, it's got to go through that exact opening. So I said to him, well, when I put it together, my concern was I didn't want to damage the dielectric because I think many of you know, I teach a little bit about coaxial cables and connectors for HRU, and there's usually what's called the bend radius. That's the maximum that you can bend a cable and not begin to get into the dielectric. So Gap says to me, well, don't worry about that. We have the cable specially made where we use a hard dielectric because within the antenna itself, there's two or three hairpin turns. So you can push as hard as you want, and you're not going to damage the dielectric. So there's a brief summary of the things that we found with the Gap Titan. It can couple to many, many different things. You've got to be totally aware of where you're putting it. Don't use LMR 400, or it's possible that if you're really good and put it together properly, maybe you can use it. But here I had good money into a good cable, totally wasted. Make sure about when you take your readings and be aware of putting 20, even though, you know, a connector is only about 0.02 in terms of a dB loss. But 20 of them brings me up to about a 0.4 dB, so we're losing almost a half a dB, and that really is the difference in what's happening. So that's my story. Read the manuals, and it's clearly our manuals. But one of the points that Roy and I spoke about when the radio shop, one of the points that we spoke about is that the company doesn't seem to publish all of that information. And that just seems silly because it just was a duplication of effort and going back over things, and then finally they said to me, well, don't do this, do this, don't do that, don't do that. And that's my story. So Roy, did I cover all the things that we discussed? K2KND.
Yes, Richie, you did, and beautifully, and I hope everyone was listening. I find this to be an amazing story that a very, very preferred, at this point, coaxial design, such as the LMR 400 and many of its clones, should not be used according to these manufacturers. But the manufacturer doesn't bother to tell anyone unless they knock on the door and ask them personally. So, A for technology and C minus for customer relations.
Yes, definitely. And they're very good on the phone. They're very knowledgeable, very technical. But I said to the people, I said, wouldn't it make sense to put an FAQ up on the website? You know, you don't have to worry about reprinting it in the manuals. Put the FAQ up on the website. And they said, yeah, that's a good idea. Maybe we'll get to it. Okay.
Yes, indeed. It's sort of amazing. It was one of my bigger surprises when I finally got into the hobby. I was a shortwave listener since high school, and I had wanted to be a ham, but I've never gotten around to it. I'd never actually met any hams in real life up until when I went for my VE exam. about 11 years ago. And I sort of assumed, I projected, that people in this hobby would be fans of all gadgetry, especially computers. But especially 11 years ago, things were quite different. There were a whole slew of guys who would tell me that either they would not have a computer in the shack or they only used it to maintain a log of their contacts and to send emails to their grandchildren. So there's a lot of people, guys who are very clever with RF, and they won't touch a computer with a 10-foot pole.
K2KMD. And one other point that we also talked about, Roy, about, I guess it could be even more than 10 years ago, it could be almost 15 years ago, when some work was being done in the backyard. I had them bury a 2-inch electrical plastic PVC conduit, and it's about 2 feet down. And I said, boy, this is really brilliant on my part, because I have to cross the sidewalk in my backyard to get from the house to where the antenna is mounted on a shed. I said, well, this is really good. Eventually, I'll get to use it. When I finally went to use it, it was pointed out to me that the pipe is actually at 2 feet. It's an average temperature of 55 degrees, whereas at some point the ground above it and the air above it becomes warmer, particularly this time of year, and you get tremendous condensation in the pipe. My thinking was I'd be able to run any kind of a wire through that pipe if I wanted to run RG8X or even an RG2 or 213. And the problem is, if you're going to do, you've got to make sure of what the jacket is. It's got to be a waterproof jacket, a PVC jacket, so that no water is going to get into it. So just bear that in mind. If you're burying, well, it's got to be cable capable of being buried.
Yes, indeed. I mean, that's why if you look at the catalog, there are coax cables that are specifically rated for burial. It's not a public relations thing. It's actually a design thing where it's a lot more rugged. I was going to experiment with very capable coax, not to bury it, but I just wanted to see how it would work in my environment. Whenever I was planning on doing that, they were out of stock at the place that I usually got my coax cable, so I was never able to kind of experiment with LMR 400 variable cable. But there's a good reason why these things exist. Again, it's not just because some guy at marketing thought he could tack on a premium and make a couple extra bucks. So good of you to point that out, Richie.
Thanks, Roy. And I'll just point out two other things about the gap that may apply to other vertical antennas also. Number one, being up in the air and vibrating with winds and things, the first gap that I put up there, some of the screws making the electrical connections became loose. So we had to take the whole antenna down, use some Tide, actually some nail polish, to make sure that wasn't going to happen again. The second thing, they tell you it doesn't have to be guyed, it can be handled up to maybe 70 mile an hour winds. But the first time that I saw the antenna swaying, I said, all right, I'm going to put a guy on. And I'm pretty certain that when I put that guy wire, at Dacron, when I put it on there, I put it where they suggested. Well, the next heavy wind caught the antenna between the guy wire and the mounting point and bent my antenna at a 45 degree angle. So we had to take it down, straighten it, and after that I put on a set of guy wires. But again, it's all in the manuals, it's all in the questions, it's all in posting the question and getting people's responses so that you don't have to double duty everything and you don't have to take things down and spend a lot of time just repeating these things all together. Read the manuals.
Thank you, Rich. I appreciate it. Thank you for your participation. The moral of tonight's story is RTFM. read the damn manual. When I was growing up, I couldn't really afford to buy a lot of toys, so I took to reading the instructions for the toys, and it was almost as much fun. So I'm a peculiar person who doesn't mind reading the manual. Some of them are obscure. We've talked to other people on the technical net where the instructions are written in what is, hopefully not totally politically incorrect, Chinglish. You know, bad, non-grammatical Chinese translated into English type of thing. But at least give it a chance. Try to make sense of the manuals that you get. There's a reason why they're included, although nowadays it's very rare that you get actual paper and ink and all. A lot of times for the people who aren't afraid of computers, they send you to a link, and usually there's either an on-web page documentation or there's a PDF that if you really want to, you can download it and either in your home office if you got a printer or over by you know, some of the, there are some stationery stores that will print out something. So read the damn manual, people. Thank you very much, Rich. I do appreciate it.
My pleasure, Roy. Thank you, Katie Candy.
Okay, gentlemen, rev up your engines. We are going to ask if anyone has any questions or topics or comments for tonight. I will take first names and call signs, and we will try to go to each person in order on the list. I would suggest, particularly if you have an amateur radio-related question, try to get your name on the list early. For other type of science and technology, we will accept anything, but I would prefer if it's later on in this technical method. So with all that in mind, please rev up your engines, hit that push to talk, give me your first name and your call sign.
N2HCN, ham radio related.
WS. Rich, ever got on 80. Paul, you doubled with someone else. I couldn't make out the someone else. Do you want to repeat yourself, Paul?
I didn't know if Rich was going to go away. I wanted to find out if he made it on 80. That was his goal, to get on 80.
Oh, okay. Rich, if you're still with us, if you want to tell Paul how 80 meters went.
I actually found that there's CW on 80. And when I saw the waterfall on FT8 go completely across the screen, that's the first time that I've seen that. So, yes, successfully on 80. And, you know, now I'm at the limitation of the antenna, the limitation of a 100 KC vertical antenna. But absolutely a world of difference. Thanks, Paul. Back to Nick.
Okay, very good. The person who was doubling with Paul, I couldn't make out any ID. So if you want to give us your first name and call sign again, please do.
Ryan, Kilowatt, Zero, Bravo.
Okay, Ryan, recognize anyone else want to put their name down on the list for tonight? Either for questions or comments or topics of interest.
W2BC.
Okay, Rich recognized. Anyone else want to put their name down? You could put your name down later. Most likely we'll have talk, but just in case, if you want to, hit that push to talk and give me your first name and call sign if you want to be on the list for questions or topics.
Did you get me?
Yes, Wes. I got you, I got Ryan, and I got Rich.
WB2BS, with a comment.
Oh, just a comment? Or you want to be on the list, or you just have a quick comment to make?
Both is one and the same, but yeah, I just have a comment on your RTFS.
Okay. Okay, fine. Feel free. Do it now.
Okay, very good. Yeah, let's look back to memory. My dad, when I was a kid, my dad W2LOZ. Now that's okay. Anyway, he always insisted before he bought me any gadget, or if he had a bias person in the manual, before I opened any gadget, up to and including my hot water 16 and my HTR-4, I had to read the manual cover to cover first, essentially, because that was the way he was trained on technology at RCA Camden, where he learned computers. Go ahead.
Well, that's a good practice, and I'm glad he taught it to you. Like I said, I just kind of fell into it. Actually, I had the opposite problem. My father, may rest in peace, didn't really like to read the manuals for anything. When I was a little kid, I would stand dangerously close to the barbecue pit where my father would pour the ignition jelly onto a lit barbecue and have the flames flare up. And when I could finally learn to read, I read the can and was aghast. So I come from a family where they generally didn't read the instructions. So maybe that's another reason why I read all kinds of instructions to this day.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, I mean, it's something. Now, of course, you said we don't get hard copy manuals for the most part anymore. And, you know, I tend to do things. I tend to do things the way a lot of people do now. When it doesn't work, I can't quickly figure it out. I read the instructions. I think the philosophy today is that if you have to read a thick manual to figure out how to operate it, it's probably not designed properly. That's probably true for some things, but not others. Anyway, go ahead with, you have a long list, so go ahead, BB2B.
Okay, very good, Frank. Thank you for your participating. The best of both worlds to me is the quick start. You know, blurb is usually a big piece of paper that's folded up to be a normal size book, a booklet type of thing. And then if you want to get into the nitty-gritty details, there's the alternative PDF file, which includes every little detail about your purchase. So I don't feel that uncomfortable if I read the quick start paperwork and don't read every word in a, you know, could be a 100-page handbook on these things. A lot of radio manuals are rather thick with text on at least the PDF file. So in general, try and read and be informed and understand the object that you just bought, because it's a learning experience and things usually don't just work simply as much as it would be nice if they did. There's always a little gotcha someplace, somewhere, somehow. You see that in Amazon reviews all the time. There's always the one guy who gives it one star because he couldn't figure out where the on button went. So keep it all in mind. Thank you, Frank. Let me drop for a sec. Okay, first up tonight is Wes, N2XJN. What's your question or your topic for tonight, Wes?
Thank you very much, Wade. If you can open up the link that I sent to the practical internal handbook, I'm going to be talking about this one. Okay?
Okay, it says it's basically a book.
Yeah, I found it fascinating. So in the meantime, while you're opening this, The name on it says Jimmy R. Winata, YV7KNE, which is Filipino.
I was that.
But what is happening is there are many, many names on it. So it's a Joseph J. Carr and McGraw-Hill and a few others. And that's important because we have a contribution of Dick for so many years in education of this community. And now it looks like this guy didn't make much money on it or any money on it, but it was his several years of contribution to make the fourth edition for it. So in the preamble it says that it is Practical Antenna Handbook, fourth edition, Joseph J. Carr. Now the Joseph J. Carr is the guy who is associated with the McGraw-Hill publishing company. So it looks like there was a guy inside of that publisher who was personally very much interested in the friend of Filipino guy, and that's why those four editions took place. Let's jump. Now, there is another interesting thing. The company is making money on the links or electronic books. They advertise links often of the material that is available online. So I first got across that book from academia that was, I believe. And then I looked. If there is a link that I would not be punished by anybody, if I have a link available to all of you guys, and I look at the link and I found the link that is in accessible for anybody, and Dr. Roy has that link of that book. Now, there are various numbers of antennas in here from historical perspective, from frequency perspective, so it's high frequency, low frequency, very low frequency whatsoever. Antennas there are presented here are antennas also from 1913 to 1940, and then it goes by chapters and the presentation of antennas from historical standpoint of U.S. Navy radio station in Arlington and plenty of others with 600, 400 feet towers in 1940s in National Airport to Washington, D.C., and so on. So we have a beautiful review of what is available. And apart from it, it is really practical. It is not written some kind of theory, but it's really practical introduction to radio broadcasting, communication, and ham radio together, and it's fourth edition. There was one person that the publisher who was killed by car accident in 2000, I believe, one, and the author of the book is sending his thank you for the effort of the previous editions and this edition. So actually he was able, the John Carr, right, was able to finish this edition, and then Joe Carr, and then he was killed by car accident. There was another one, K4NFU, a friend, a colleague for 30 years who is sorely missed. That is the dedication by Jimmy R. Winata into the book. And then rest off about the book, I would like Dr. Roy to give you more information. Dr. Roy.
Well, you know, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I'm not that fast a reader. Wesley sent me it. I put it in my iPad for future references. I have a bunch of antenna books that I keep. This one is thankfully not highly technical. So if you've ever picked up a graduate level book on antenna theory, you probably needed a couple of cotton balls because the equations give you a nosebleed. But these are very, very easy to digest discussions of antenna theory, and it even goes into length. There's a whole chapter about Smith charts and how to read them, how to interpret them, what they're for, such. So it strikes me as a very kind of easy to digest, but a very thick book on the subject of antennas, and especially, so the price is certainly right. I have the ARRL handbook for antennas. I have the Radio Society of Great Britain's book on antenna. I have, I think it's called Rob Hamel's antenna book. That's a German manufacturer that was translated to English. So I will post the link. It's apparently posted on archive.org. So hopefully no one will mind if I put a link up for that.
Thank you for that. I'm going to read a text. The original intent when the first edition was planned was to provide the reader with practical yet theoretical book that could be used with only a minimal effort to actually design and install radio antenna. It was assumed that the readership would possess a wide range of levels of antenna sophistication, from novice, newbie, to professional engineer. That assumption proved to be correct, and I have received letters from a wide variety of people. The success of the three previous editions, Practical Antenna Handbook, has been most gratifying. Okay, I'm going to skip it. So, actually, he was rewarded with the reader's appreciation that once you read it, you can make the antenna. So, in other words, you go, despite your level, you go into it, you read it, and you make the antenna. And it was absolutely amazing. Thank you, John. Okay. So, the content is introducing the radio broadcasting and communication, radio wave propagation, transmission lines, Smith chart. So, for those who do not know anything about the Smith chart, you just look at it and you know it. At least you get it right away. Fundamentals of radio antennas, high frequency dipole and other Doppler antennas, vertically polarized HF antennas, multiband tunable wire antennas, long wire directional antennas, hidden and limited space antennas, directional space vertical antennas, and beam antennas. Antennas, microwave, waveguides, and antennas. Antenna noise temperature, antenna vector astronomy, installing and counter-shooting antennas and transmission lines. Oh, yeah. And I almost finished antennas for radio direction finding, RDF. So we have somebody who is here. Antenna system, mobile emergency portable.
about the antenna for low frequency operation, measurement and adjustment, the general antenna kind of construction, and grounding
I think I doubled with you. For some odd reason, your audio is about 10 dB low at times. So you might want to hit your amplifier into the line.
How about now?
A little bit better. Are you able to put some kind of extra oomph on your signal, or you want to just try again and see if it sounds a little bit better?
Okay. How about now? Is it good?
It was, and then it faded a bit again. I think there's a doubler out there. Now it sounds fine to me.
Yeah, let's turn it up. Anyhow, okay, so Dr. Roy, we don't have a problem with communication right now. I'm sorry I doubled with you. Would you mind to repeat your comment?
Unfortunately, I didn't write it down and I totally forgot it and got distracted. I'm sure it'll pop up at one point or another. I pretty much said that it's a good resource. It's not the latest, greatest publication, but it doesn't have to be. A lot of antenna theory and facts and figures and such haven't changed in decades, and the price is certainly right. So I mentioned that I was going to put it up on the link page, roy.ac2gs.com, later in the technical net, and people can download it and thumb through it at their pleasure.
Okay, she's, I'm not sure. If I was also heard, I'm going to repeat just a little about it. So the general idea of this book is you read it and you know it. It means you want to build a particular antenna, you just read it and you can build it. If you want to know about history, so if you want to know about the history of communication, it starts from 1867 and gives you all of the information in the short half page text. Okay, so Dr. Roy, you're going to tell me if my signal was good, but I believe nobody can beat me now. Okay, Dr. Roy.
Yeah, you passed transmissions, we're fine, Wesley.
Okay, so I manage for all kinds of frequencies, from very low frequencies to very high.
To troubleshoot your antennas and transmission lines and all information that you need. Thank you very much, Dr. Ray.
You're welcome, Wesley. Thank you for participating. Thank you for giving me another reference material for my iPad. And like I said before, if anyone's interested, go to roy.ac2gs.com later tonight when I load it up and put it on my link page. You can download it and read it yourself. So thanks, Wesley. Next on our list for tonight is Ryan. What question or comment or topic for tonight, Ryan?
Yeah, great. Hey, Zero BD, let me try to the signal report because I've been getting some bad news. How do I sound?
Unfortunately, you're about 40 to 50% background noise. So, if there's anything that you could do to kind of improve that, if you have a handy talkie and you're indoors, if you could go outdoors, if you can't go outdoors, then maybe put it closer to the window, horizontally oriented, maybe twirl it a little bit vertical. You never know, but anything that you could do to kind of keep some of the noise down would improve your readability.
I called in
noisy on your initial transmission, and it gets a little bit worse and a little bit better on alternate transmission. So there's a lot of noise in it.
Line, I'll move around. So go ahead with the next question,
and
you can come back to the
afternoon. Ryan, we'll get back to you. Rich, WBZ, what's your question or your topic or your comment for tonight, Rich?
Yeah, sorry, Roy. Let me turn this down. For some reason, I can't get into either Selden or Middle Island, and I could get into all the other repeaters around my area. I just can't get into Selden or Middle Island, so I'm on Echolink. As we were talking last night, maybe you could fill in the people listening, I choked to death an antenna by putting two toroids in line with the coax at the feed point. What I did today was I took both of those toroids out of the feed line, and the antenna seems to be working as good as it's going to work. People even heard me on 80 meters, which is a first. It's what it is a half-wave long wire, but a shortened half-wave long wire, and it has two coils in it. One of 34 microhenries and one of 90 microhenries. And I wasn't able to, I worked that on 20 okay, but that was about it. And when I had one toroid at the feed point, it got very, very hot. Very hot. So something wasn't right. But I decided today, just for the heck of it, I decided to, rather than move those toroids, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 feet away from the feed point, I decided, let me see what happens if I take them both off. And I did, and as the other Richie was saying, the waterfalls that I'm viewing now on my SDR receiver are all great. They're fabulous. On all bands, I'm talking about all bands from 80 to 10. And it tunes up with the tuner. So, what do you think about that new development, Roy? Go ahead.
AC2GS. Well, you have to sort of understand how NFED half waves work. Now, theoretically, if you look, theory is wonderful, but in real life, reality is messier than theory. So, if you look in the books about theory, an NFED half wave does not require any counterpoise whatsoever. It is basically you've taken a center feed half wave antenna and slid the feed point from the center to the extreme end. The increased impedance going up to about 2,000 to 3,000 ohms. You correct that to a degree with a 49-to-1. On a transformer, and then the rest of the way you could use your antenna tuner to get it to as close to a 50 ohm nominal as you need. In reality, even an NFED half wave needs at least a up the suggestion of a counterpoint, and you had abutted the B point of your 49-to-1 balance with a coiled up coax was coiled around a toroid. So you were effectively choking off a counterpoise capability of your coax cable at the very PL-259 plug. So it didn't have a counterpoise. Again, it was sort of in the world of physics like playing on a seesaw where someone had sawed off the one half of the seesaw and thrown it away. So it's not very fun to play with half of the seesaw. So that's what you were kind of doing at the time. You could have moved the choke a couple of feet. That would probably give you enough counterpoise to balance out the antenna and have you get a good RF output. Instead, you decided to remove it. You had an RF choke farther down line. You need a certain amount of non-common mode choke coax with these antennas just for the counterpoise, but you don't want it to get into your house where it'll act like a radiating antenna and spew RF on your computers and your radios and all kinds of fun stuff that might not be properly shielded.
Yes, well, I also took the toroid, but I wasn't sure of the composition of the toroid. I took it off at the end of the coax that goes into the ring, and all seems to be working okay. I sent you the DNA sweep that looks to me, anyway, like a normal DNA sweep, and it's a little higher on some bands that I would like. Maybe like 2.5-to-1, but I'm mostly interested in 80, 40, and 20. And at least on 20 and 80, I could get down to a 1-to-1 match with my external antenna tuner. So I think that those toroids really not only weren't helping, they were impeding the signal. And so I took them all off, and I just have about a 20-foot length of coax going from the 49-to-1 down into the radio, or into the tuner, and then into the radio. And all seems to be well. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm glad to hear that. A little concerned, you have to understand that doing VNA sweeps is great, but the VNA will not tell you if you're getting a lot of RF in your shack. And RF in your shack is probably not the healthiest, again, for electrical equipment. Now, if you keep it low, if you just use in 10, 20 watts, you might get away with it. There could be enough shielding on different electrical components in your apartment. But as you kick the power higher and higher, you inevitably kick the reflected RFI that's coming back on common mode. And, you know, that could become a problem. I think I've mentioned in the past on my 10-meter net in the morning, we've had people who unfortunately had enough common mode getting back into their shack that if they brought their power output high, it got into their microphone preamplifier and they had some audio. So if everything works out fine and your computer doesn't reboot or any other strange things, then so be it. Perhaps the antenna tuner has a built-in common mode choke in its design, so maybe you're benefiting from the choke in that antenna tuner. I don't know. It depends upon the individual design. But usually with NFEDs, you don't really want something completely non-choke when it gets into your house because they are infamous for spewing RFI to other people. So you want to kind of minimize that as best you can.
I do have five clip-on toroids, where the coax goes into the tuner. They're small, and I don't even know their value. They're small, about an inch long, each one of them. I have five of them clipped on to the coax. So that's, maybe that's, I'll see when I try to get on 10. I was getting reports on my other antenna, my other NZ half-wave. I was getting reports of RF on my signal. But I haven't made any 10-meter contacts yet, so I'll see if that happens with this antenna. And then I'll put one of the toroids, I'll put it closer to the radio than to the balance and see if that helps. But I don't know if I even need that now. Maybe these clamp-on toroids are doing the job for me.
Yeah, they might be enough, as we talked in the past.